Hello everyone, welcome to our live event for International Women's Day, and I'm really glad to be here with you guys. So today I've got two special guests with me. I'm going to get them to introduce themselves because I'm sure they'll do that much better. So Katie, do you want to start? Oh, Katie, sorry, you were on mute. I've just unmuted you.
Thank you. I sent you a message and said, I think you've got me muted.
I saw something flash up, but I didn't pay any attention.
It's okay. I'm from England originally and living in Cairo, Egypt at the moment. And I'm a sacred dance therapist and dance artist. And I specialize in Kundalini activation, integration. Also, I work a lot with people with past life, quantum life healing, with sexual abuse and trauma, ancestral healing, so from the epigenetic side. So it kind of goes in many directions depending on what the person or the group needs at that time. And for me, I'm especially interested in, I guess, the older sacred dance traditions, and especially now living in Egypt, as I said, it's kind of researching about the temples and the priestesshoods and the dream temples, and I'm working with the Blue Lotus and kind of doing research through dance with this, and kind of developing. Yeah, many things are developing, I guess you could say. Had to explain everything in a nutshell. basically I perform dance, various kinds of dance, teach various kinds of dance, and then the dance therapy side as well. And specializing in the more cultural sacred dance side of things.
Wow, that's cool. Thank you. Yeah, it's so cool to have you here today.
Thank you for asking me.
And Kelsey, do you want to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. My name is Kelsey Walker. I am the author of the book Face Everything and Rise, a memoir on our 18-week abortion with our daughter Hope. At 17 weeks, we found out she had osteogenesis imperfecta type 2, which is the fatal version of brittle bone disease. So all of the bones in her body were broken, and her ribs were breaking in on her heart and her lungs. So my husband and I made the difficult decision to terminate the pregnancy. And the book is about that journey, as well as how the laws are made in the United States right now that are wrapped around these clinics that cause trauma and caused harm while I was having the procedure that precipitated post-traumatic stress disorder. And from that, I published the book. I found out that the state of Texas here in the United States was passing something called a heartbeat bill, and it would have caused harm and would have been a potential death sentence for a woman like me at 18 weeks, to not have that option. So the book came pouring out of me in 6 months, and I published the book in December, and upon, sharing my story and sharing the book with others, I found out that there's a lot of women out there like me that have had abortions, lost children, or lost pregnancies that desperately need support. Mm-hmm. And someone who's been there. And from that, From the Green Desk was born. It is a up-and-coming nonprofit that I am the founder of, and I provide coaching as well as group therapy to people who have gone through abortions or have lost children or pregnancies. And in addition to that, to really immerse people in healing, we have a blog as well as a podcast coming in March. And finally in April, we will have narrative meditation to really help people walk through their stories and unlock that trauma through the written word.
Wow, amazing. Yeah, it's such a difficult story behind such amazing work. Thank you so much for coming and being part of our show today.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
I'm also joined with Mary and Nana, who are part of the team here at Creative Mental Health. And so we're here to talk about the types of problems that women face in celebration of women at the same time. And what kind of things help, what you do in both of your work that helps women. There's a message here. Is there text to live speech? I'm not sure, Liz, if we've got text to live speech when it's live, but if you rewatch the video afterwards, the Facebook always put the text to live speech on. Just to say, if anyone else has any comments, just pop them in the chat, because we really want to make this interactive, and anything that you guys want to ask as we go along, do so. Where to begin, really, because there's so much to talk about, isn't there? I was actually watching it was interesting hearing what you were saying there about the laws and the rules in some parts of America, because I was watching the news in the UK this morning, and during the pandemic, there were some real changes in the way that people were, women were able to access abortion early. I think it was sort of 10 weeks that they're doing it now by post. And they were talking, it was quite a well-balanced, a TV article around the benefits and the downsides to that. But there's so much disparity across the world in how we manage these problems and offer women, the rights to kind of consider these different kind of layers of what having children means. But also, you spoke about the traumas of kind of when it's not a choice, when it's something that is thrusted upon you. And that's
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. So what caused the trauma and what caused the most harm was, with the laws surrounding abortion in the state of Kansas, which is where I had my procedure done, I had to be asked 6 times if I wanted to have the procedure done. Ultimately, at the bottom of my heart, did I want that to happen? Of course not. But the fact is that it was threatening my life, and my daughter was, there's all sorts of debates on whether or not she was suffering, but with that many broken bones, it's hard to imagine that she wasn't. Mm. She had zero chance of survival with the type of OI that she had. So, what we did was to save my life. And in addition, my husband was not allowed in the room with me for the final stage of the procedure. So I was lucky to have compassionate caregivers that, there was a nurse that locked eyes with me and held my hand the whole time. There was, they gave me a card with her footprints on it and a blanket as well with, that they held her in. But, it doesn't replace having that loved one there holding your hand. And that, the laws are wrapped up in that. They also aren't allowed to fully put you out for the procedure at that point either. They give you something called midazolam, mm-hmm. which helps you make you sleepy and helps you forget. But I remember everything about the condition her body was in, the pulling and things like that. And I outline it in the book, what it's really like, because if you try to look up what it's really like, there's a lot of propaganda surrounding it. And, the more that we share real stories about what happens and the trauma that happens surrounding these, because of these laws and surrounding these experiences, the more we can talk about it honestly.
And so you spoke about narrative therapy. tell me a bit more about how that helped you.
Yeah, absolutely. So really what was good about narrative therapy, and I basically performed my own narrative therapy on myself during that 6 months, but I basically took, words are hard. So with the post-traumatic stress disorder that I developed from the procedure, I have frequent flashbacks. They're a little bit more managed now with medication, but they are overtaking flashbacks. And whenever I would have a flashback, I would write it down. I would let myself get really immersed in that stimuli and what happened. And every time I did that, accompanied with EMDR therapy that I was going through, I want to say that the flashbacks, it's like someone turned the volume down on what was going on, because I was able to release it out into the world and associate it differently. It's like it wasn't so loud anymore, and they become less painful with this narrative therapy and with time.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I know it's a really hard thing to have gone through. And for anyone watching, so what we mean by narrative therapy is going through the story of what happened. So in a way, it's a form of exposure that you talk about. You go through the story of what's happened, but also it's about processing that memory. It can be a really powerful tool. And as a writer, then that just feels like a natural way of working through it.
Yeah, and it was the first time, between writing the book as well as the EMDR, and then that October of 2021, I went to the Women's March in Kansas City, and I carried a sign that talked about me and my daughter Hope's situation. And I went by myself because my son had football practice or a football game. So my husband couldn't go with me for this. So I went by myself. I had some pepper spray on me just in case there was a weirdo. But I went and I took the sign for Hope and myself, and the amount of women and the amount of people that, pandemic be danged, physically embraced me and, just had me share my story and loved on me. It really healed me to be embraced by these women who were there, who could have been like, you're not our target audience, or we don't want to hear for that from you. Instead, I was embraced and loved on by total strangers, and it truly healed me.
And now you're doing the same to others, which is incredible. And sort of following up on that, your story is, I could probably talk to you further about that, but it's such a raw thing and such a thing to go through that I'm going to kind of bring the conversation over a little bit to the narrative side of things. And when we were talking about that, it reminded me, Katie, of some of the workshops I've done with you, where you've done there's been a dance narrative. And I was just wondering, do you incorporate those same sorts of narrative ideas in your healing work?
I think with movement, and I've found this for myself personally, because you can go beyond words or beyond writing. So it's almost like you can get past the control part of your brain or the parts of your body that you're controlling. And when you make it pure movement, and in a way that you're allowing your body to move you to express a story or express an emotion. And you can go even deeper, because then you don't even really have to know what the story is, and you don't have to explain yourself to anybody about why I'm moving in this way, or why I'm shaking or crying or laughing, or and you're just doing it, and everyone else in the space is in their own way of expression as well. And I really encourage people to let themselves go into these uncontrolled, wild parts of themselves that they can't do in everyday life, because it's in that wildness or what feels like madness, that's when you really get these breakthrough moments, and obviously in a safely held space, so that you've got that container to do it in and come back to an integration and a grounded space to leave with. And for my own journey, and I think, Sarah, you don't know about this either, around 9 years ago, I had a miscarriage, but I didn't know that I was pregnant. And I can't think there's a name for it, but basically I was pregnant and had the miscarriage, and I was having my periods as usual, but the fetus and everything hadn't come out. So everything was still inside of me for around 6 months and slowly poisoning me from the inside out. So when I found out about it, and I was living in India at the time, and it was my husband, he actually said, "I think you're pregnant because your skin smells different." And I thought, the only time my skin has smelled different is when I had septicemia a few years earlier. And so for me, it was almost like I hadn't even had the chance to get used to the idea of, am I pregnant? Oh, I am. Oh, no, I'm not pregnant. And now I have to have this surgery. And it was just all in one day, really. And I used that, as you say, as this narrative, because my hormones had gone completely crazy, because my body thought I was pregnant for 6 months, but I wasn't, but I was, the hormones were there. And so I just locked myself away for 3 days and kind of found my way through it with movement and just really going into my body and really nurturing myself in that. So it's, hearing you speak, Kelsey, as well, it's like that feeling of like, okay.
That's such a beautiful story.
Oh, thank you. And I think as well, there's something that's not talked about very much and that holds a big stigma, is that women who have had children and then choose to have abortions and maybe in between children as well. And this also happened to me, because my daughter was waiting to have open heart surgery and could get a call at any time that she needed to have this huge operation. I'd got two children, well, she was one, under one, my son was three, I was 25, and suddenly I was pregnant and I was like, I cannot handle this. So I think this is something that also is really important for women to be able to speak about, and that they've had to make those choices for many reasons, and that it's okay to do that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, well, it's something that actually is probably almost touched. There's a story there with almost every woman around her fertility, around, you know, these types of issues coming up for a woman, and yet we don't talk about it, we don't let it be heard. And you know, with what we know about telling our story and how healing that can be, and expressing it creatively in writing and dance and in art, but yet we in our society, and this is across the world, not just in one culture, you know, we actually don't allow ourselves to talk about these things.
I call it the silent scream.
Yeah.
Because it's literally your soul is screaming out for help and community. And we as a globe have decided to not talk about that. And that's why I founded the nonprofit, is that we do talk about it. And we talk about it in a community way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what do you find, for this is a question for both of you really, what do you find to be the most, the technique that kind of resonates with people the most? Is there one? Is it several? Does it vary? Let me put that out to you. That's a big question.
You wanna go first, Katie, or do you? It is a big question.
I think there's not one technique, and you know, Sarah, from kind of coming to sessions with me, it's very connected to the person and very intuitive. So I haven't got a step-by-step plan of, oh, okay, I do this for this and I do that for that. It's completely, I'm following the energy of the group or of the person. So, but I do find that themes come up, I guess you could say, like themes and archetypes and the feeling that I get from the group and the characters of the group. But also ultimately, there's very much a mirroring. So it's like sometimes I look around the room and I'm looking at everybody in their own process, and it's like they are all elements of me and I'm also an element of them, and how that's why these things are coming up to be seen and expressed, because there's a resonance on that level between us. So for me, in holding that space, I'm listening for that, I'm feeling for that, and then I'm letting my body guide me to then guide the person or the group. But I think as a something overall, it's really about flow and allowing stagnant energy or stuck energy to be released, and electricity or a flow of energy to be able to move freely in whatever part of the body or the whole body, and through that the person can find themselves again more deeply and also choose, and I'm very much about freedom of choice on every level and every subject, and especially about people being free to choose who they are and what they're doing with their body, and that can also change in moment to moment. Of they don't have to be stuck in a box of, okay, this is me and I can never change. You can change in every instant. So I don't know if that answers your question. But just to add to that, on another positive note, is through this and through this movement of energy or movement of circulation or whatever you want to think of it as, there are five babies in the world from coming to sessions with me. So this has been from women who have found it very difficult to conceive, and they maybe haven't come with the intention of getting pregnant. It's been something that's going on in their lives, and they've come for another reason. Maybe just their friend has asked them to be. But then, they've become pregnant, and sometimes after just one session. So for me, it's like a sparkling alchemy that is possible for people.
And actually, one of the things that kind of came from that question, what was in the behind that, was that because I struggled with my own infertility for years, and so as a therapist myself, I very rarely have worked with people with pregnancy or child birthing kind of problems, because it was always very triggering for me. But what I do find in a lot of my work is that there are themes behind what people suffer through, that we as people have some kind of united way of managing or way of feeling the pain that we feel. So there's often themes where that kind of sit with people in groups. And that's kind of where the question sort of stemmed from, really, because it's an area that I don't work in, but I wonder, how that kind of sits when we think about it in a community sense, you know, in a united sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And some of the themes that I see is really the stigma that surrounds abortion as well as grief. There's a huge stigma around grief, and how long you should grieve and how long it should take for you to get over it is definitely a question, as well as finding ways to have closure as well, and what closure looks like for different people, and that length of grief and how it changes. Grief isn't necessarily a linear path. It changes with anniversaries, with holidays, with different stages in your life, and it touches all parts of you. It changes color, it changes shape, it changes expression as time goes on. And those are some of the themes, as well as I've actually had some partners reach out to me that said, what do I say to her while she's grieving, or to the person who is grieving, what do I say to them, because they're in this hard, dark hole. What is comforting, and making sure that there's support on both sides. Because for me, it took my husband seeing the red flags that I was in trouble before we finally found licensed help for me. And it didn't help that we were in a small town in the middle of Kansas, trying to seek out help. But when the red flags came, it was important for him to communicate the right way. Look, I'm going to help you seek out help.
Yeah. And that stands for any kind of problem, doesn't it, really? That to have somebody in your life who can have, who is sort of given the permission to say, look, you need to, something's going on here.
You need to take it to the next level.
So, Mary, did you have anything you wanted to add or ask into the mix?
I would like to ask Kelsey, from the Green Desk, what is your future plan? Mostly, the lawmakers, they are men. And I think abortion is such a topic which is very personal. So they mostly, it revolves around, rape victims and unmarried women. And they have this general bias around it, and even religious implications. So how would you change that through your organization, How would you make people aware that it's actually personal and not like in general?
Absolutely. So one of the things that I'm working on is just changing the narrative. Because right now the narrative in the United States, and I don't know if it's the narrative worldwide, I definitely don't want to throw that onto a country, but there's this picture of slut shaming, and that women who are having abortions are these loose women and things like that. And if that, if that is your narrative, then that is, your choice and your determination. And that's your life to live. But what we found is that 67% of women who are having abortions already have children. These are already women who have, are part of the child rearing stage. You also have 1 in 4 women across the world who will be affected by abortion and have a procedure. When they talk about late term abortions, that is technically what I had. And because of the laws in Texas, there was a woman named Anna who whose baby, she was 18 weeks pregnant. Her baby was underdeveloped and died. And because of the state law in Texas, she had to hope that her body miscarried and hope that she didn't get an infection like the one that Katie is describing that could kill you. So she had to hope that happened. So far as I know, she survived, which is, thank goodness. But the fact of the matter is, not everyone's going to be that lucky. And while the war with, Ukraine and Russia are going on, 3 states in the United States have moved forward with bills restricting reproductive rights while we aren't looking. And because we're paying attention to, bigger things as well. What I'm doing personally, and the vision for the from the Green Desk is right now we're running a 50 states challenge, which definitely isn't inclusive to the United States. If you have politicians or people in power that you want to send my book to, let me know and I'll make it happen. I'm getting at cost printed copies of my book and sending them to the state senators, as well as the governors, the United States president, the Supreme Court justices. I am sending them my book, and it's not about selling books because I'm doing it at cost, to change the narrative that is surrounding abortion in our country, that it is women who are in, well, women and others, because there's also, folks that are non-binary and things like that, that also need the healthcare. Pushing that this is the narrative that's going on. This is what you're restricting. People who are desperate for this as healthcare, and also making sure they understand that the laws that they're wrapping around these clinics are what is causing the trauma, not the care providers, because the care providers are compassionate, sweet people. It is the laws that they're wrapping around it that is causing harm to our people. So that's my way of trying to move the needle and hold them a little accountable for their actions, because, I always say, whether I'm coaching a team or whether I'm, working with individuals, if I didn't say it once, then I never said it. Well, if you give them the book and they said that they didn't read it, or if they read it and they are ignoring it and moving forward with it anyway, that's the testament to their humanity, not mine.
Yeah.
So that's how I'm pushing forward and holding them accountable.
You had me empowered to kind of hold my fist up and be like, empowered to the women.
Yes. Absolutely.
So that's amazing, and we're behind you. Anything you. That you need in your in this fight, we're there with you for sure.
Share the free funder. It takes $30 to sponsor a state. That gets 3 copies sent to each state legislature. Like I said, it's at cost, and it's at shipping cost. So I'm not as about selling books. I'm about pushing the message out there that we deserve better.
Yeah, that's really coming across. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So to kind of finish up our session today, what I'd like to sort of think about, what kind of message do we want to send out to women today? What helpful message can we give out? Is anything that just a thing that comes to the top of your mind? Mary, do you have something?
Actually, I would like to ask Katie one last question.
Oh, okay, go on.
Since we are talking about motherhood, and I would like to ask, does ancestral blockages, tend to affect women? Like, and how do you kind of help them, their clients, to remove it?
Definitely, from the male and the female line, there's so many things that can affect. So whether this is because of strongly held beliefs about how you should behave, or about, say, from religion, from society, and this is passed down, and it can be passed down through hearing older generations speaking about it, but it's almost something, it's like it's in your blood, if there's been these such strongly held beliefs. And in the same way, the emotions of a woman when she's pregnant, and how this has been passed on to the child. And somebody really interesting to look at is Bruce Lipton, who he's really pioneered the epigenetics science and research. It can go in so many directions. It's not necessarily about the genetics, and that my great grandma had breast cancer, say, and it means that I could get it, or my daughter could get it, because a lot of it is about the environment of your thoughts, if you're and your belief systems around that. So in this power of manifestation that we have, we can change this. So I work with it through movement. So this can be identifying the places in your body where those beliefs are held, because it's not just that our mind is here in what we think is our brain. It can be anywhere. So where are we holding that fear of having the same illness, or where are we holding that belief system? And finding that and working with it in a way to support your body to unravel it. So it's like I always say it's like spaghetti. You're kind of unfolding and unraveling. And this might take time, because there's always layers, and then there's what you have also added to it. But 99% of the time, the things that we're holding, it's not our stuff. It's coming from everywhere else. So it's working in this way, and also through questioning, like questioning the self. And this could be by me questioning that person, or giving questions to the group to journal on, or encouraging them to keep questioning, and also communicating with their body, so that, again, they're not thinking of this is my mind and this is my body. It's very much in unity, and the more you create a dialogue with your body, then you're working together in tandem all the time, and then you know, okay, I need to eat this right now, or this is what I need to do today, or I need to wear this color today, or, you know, like from big to small things. And then intuition comes into that, and again, lots of other stuff as well. So yeah, that's in a nutshell.
You know, it's funny, whenever I hear the word manifestation, I always kind of link that to as if it's some kind of form of magic, you know, like we're calling to the universe for magic to happen. But to me, what that really means is it's our ability to make our own future, in that when we look at our belief systems, and when we look at kind of where that comes from, and how we got to make those assumptions about the world and life. We then get this power that we can decide what to take forward and what not to, and then we make things happen.
And all the answers we already have them. It's already in our body, and it's finding the gateways into those portals of yourself, and then opening them and opening them, and then choosing.
Yeah, that expression through creativity that we've talked about. So, but as an undercurrent throughout this whole conversation of writing, you know, art, dance, music, all of those forms of expression where we can elicit those emotions and feelings out into the space, so that in that's healing, that's kind of processing what's happened.
And also, if you think of all the eggs that each woman holds, we don't have that many babies. I mean, however many millions of eggs there are. So why do we have them if not for our creative energy, and to utilize that energy into projects and into creating the life that we want, and maybe or maybe not children along the way as well. But there's so much power that we hold in our ovaries, in our womb space. And most of the time, it's not being used, and it's not connected to. So it's, the full power connection to our treasure trove in our womb space.
I've never thought about it like that before. Yeah,
you always think of it like a treasure chest. Okay, what will I find in there today, and how can I shine it into the world?
No. Oh, brilliant. So thanks for being here in this show. It's been a really great conversation. And Kelsey, any final sort of points from you that you want to bring up, any like final message?
Yeah, so my final message would be, if you are out there and you are struggling, or you're suffering from, you know, after having an abortion or having a miscarriage or losing a child, you know, reach out to us. the coaching and the group therapy sessions are free. What we waited for 4 years before we told our families what really happened to Hope. And out of fear of shame and guilt and all these perceived things that are going on. And so we waited 4 years before what I call our truth tour. And what we found was that our family fully embraced us and loved us anyway, and still loved Hope. Still, you know, my in-laws still have her tree that blossoms even during December planted in the back of their yard. So don't wait to tell your truth, and don't wait to seek out your tribe and seek out help.
Mm. Yeah, there's so many shoulds, you know, in the undercurrent of all that, of the grief and the hurt that we go through is about shoulds and about what we think others might view us with, or society. Yeah. Yes, that's a really nice message to,
yes,
yeah, not to hesitate and to be your honest, genuine self in that moment. Yeah, and give that truth. Yeah, thank you. Mary, any final words from yourself?
I'm just thankful for the guests, Katie and Kelsey, that they shared their story today with us and with the audience. And I hope more women will come out and, you know, speak about their grief and trauma. And I hope they get support through Kelsey and Katie as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely.
Katie, any final message from yourself?
I guess, the treasure trove.
Yeah, I really like that.
When you wake up in the morning and like, hello, buddy, what magical mystery tour do you have for me today in this treasure chest in my womb space that I can delve into and manifest and enjoy and shine into the world, but unashamedly.
Yeah, fabulous. All right, so it sounds like what we're saying is give your truth and take it from your treasure chest. And in there you'll find all that you need.
Totally.
Truly.
Fab. All right, well, thank you everyone, and we'll catch you next time.